Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself, and apparently having scratchy-throated voices. I'll talk more about that later. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsack. I wasn't going to say anything off air. I want to hear
it. Me too. I was wondering. I'm like, this voice is a little raspier than normal. And I'm Jennifer Landa.
Welcome to Force Center. I had a long weekend. Anyway, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Dark Disciple and Lots of Rest. Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. To download your free audiobook, you can go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. We also have some just quick programming notes. If you're watching or listening and you're like, hey, this is their questions episode, but it's Tuesday. What is this madness? Because Bad Batch is now coming out. Starting this week, we're going to be doing our questions episode on Tuesday, and then our Bad Batch report we'll be recording on Wednesday. It'll be coming out later on Wednesday, maybe early Thursday. We'll see if the internet upload forces are kind to us. And then, of course, we have Subjective Wars every Friday, Databank Brawl Rewind every Sunday, podcast only, and then Jedi Beat on Monday, which is YouTube only. Jennifer, Jedi Beat has been released to the world. Can you tell people a little bit about it? It's so exciting.
Yes. So right now it is a 5-part series. Every week we are looking at some of the historical aspects, weird aspects of Star Wars, some of the creators, the people behind this wonderful galaxy. And the first episode that's live is all about the behind the scenes of the Mos Eisley Cantina. And that is up on our YouTube channel. It's been a labor of love. And I'm so happy that it's finally here and that you all can see it. Thank you to our patrons who made this possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Ken, what was your, we were texting back and forth about like, well, we knew this would be good, but damn, what was your reaction watching it?
It, you know, so fun. Cause remember, you know, for those listening, like we were like, Jen was loading in the file when the strike hit, this was hitting. But it gave Jen time to maybe go back and rework some things that she wanted. And Joseph, you're right. Like I remember this episode. The Jedi Beat stuff, the Happy Beep stuff was always some of my favorite episodes here on Force Center. But I was blown away, Jen, by what you put together. I really do believe you have a skill. It's a mix of documentary, celebration, exploration, investigation. It's a news report. It's a GD news report of Star Wars. And I just was pulled in again. I got to watch it, you know, on my Final Cut Pro. And that's when I was texting both of you going, this is damn good. And I'm just not only proud of you, but just happy to have it live finally for everyone to see. So and I've put the call out in the Discord. We have a Joseph and I years ago decided we need to work on asking for things more than and I'm asking for y'all. If you enjoyed it, not only like and share the video, but tell people. Social media is very fractured, as Joseph's spoken on before here, and it's hard to get the word out. So if you're on Threads, post it. If you're on Blue Sky, post it. If you're on Twitter X, post it. Instagram, post it. And we really want this to reach out to the world, and I think Star Wars fans would benefit from it. So long-winded answer, Joseph, but that was all the thoughts that rushed in my head when I watched it.
I understand. I watched it this morning with my breakfast, and I was saying this to Jennifer before we started recording. I love that it is just told as a narrative, is a specific story of the cantina from conception to filming to questioning to refilming, putting it in that very clear context. There's so many details that we as fans either hear or know or kind of half hear or half forget. And, you know, little things like, you know, hey, Greedo in the high heels. Like, I think like a lot of fans know that. But to put it in context and make it a story and a narrative, it becomes so much more than the sum of its parts. Like, it's fun to watch and go like, oh, this is when my favorite cantina aliens mask got made. But for me sitting here watching it, because you construct it as a narrative, it is also just sort of taking us through George Lucas's adventures too, of all the budget information and the commitment that he had as an artist to be like, we have to do this kind of desperate reshoot to make the cantina scene what I wanted it to be. And just that perspective of remembering, like, this person, George Lucas, was absolutely back against the wall. No money, no time, only a handful of people on board that his vision made any sense. And he was like, I know what this needs to reshoot one booth on La Brea Avenue. Forming that all as a narrative just really makes me appreciate what George Lucas went through, and just the filmmaking process and the relationship to today. When people hear like, oh, you know, they didn't plan that important scene. They just shot it up against a, you know, an alley wall on a Tuesday with a green screen. This film must be bad. The horrible planning. This is such a reminder of this is actually what it does take to make good creative choices, is fighting for it and going back for it and desperate throws to save the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm believing in yourself when no one else does. Cause boy, you watch that raw footage and you're like, oh, this is whew.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. To know what it could look like at the end and sound like, yeah. So great. Mm-hmm. So great. Can't wait to see the next episodes of Jedi Beat.
Thank you.
Didn't mean to turn this into Jedi Beat commentary, the follow-up video, but.
We're just, you know, we've been going for 10 years now, but Jen, it's always been some of my favorite stuff. And like you said earlier, you got a particular set of skills that a lot of people just don't have. So happy to shine a spotlight on what's going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ken, do you want to talk a little bit about 007 Center?
I do. This is something I'm also proud about because this is a series of movies that we've talked about diving into, but they're outside of Star Wars, and we didn't know how to do that. And then, well, you know, Other Center emerged, and we started seeing a way forward into other areas. And Joseph and I sat down to begin 007 Center, but it is exclusive to Patreon supporters. All levels, you get to get the first episode, which is our dive into 2006 Casino Royale. We're looking at all the Daniel Craig Bond films. But if you're not a Patreon supporter, maybe you don't like Patreon, or maybe, hey, just month to month, not something you can do or want to do, we understand. It's for sale in the Patreon shop. Just go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Hit the shop tab, and you can get the audio version for $3, the video version for $5. I'm not wearing a tuxedo in it, and I feel I've let some people down, but it's there. And, you know, 2.5 hours that I ended that session, Joseph, I don't know how you felt. I felt jazzed. Dare I say jazzed about our conversation about that film. I love it.
I was so excited, and I've been stopping myself from – I wanted to just rewatch Quantum of Solace immediately, but it's like, mm-hmm. No, save it. Save it for when we're going to talk about it. Yeah. So thank you to everybody who has said nice things in our Patreon and who has purchased the video or the audio. So thank you very much. Last bit of business on that is we do have a Patreon goal that we're building to. At 400 paid patrons, we're going to do a commentary of a Star Wars film, and patrons are going to be able to vote on what that is. So if you're interested in that, considering becoming a Patreon member at any amount, as long as it's paid, we're at 395 as of this recording. So very close to that goal.
Unlocking it. A lot of fun.
Yeah. And there is one more thing. We have a live stream this Friday, right, Ken?
Yes, we do. This Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific, we're going live. And, you know, it's a post Bad Batch season 3 debut and premiere. So we really want your questions and thoughts and opinions and predictions about Bad Batch going forward. And it's pure with us. We'll just say we don't have the screeners. Some people are very mm-hmm. fortunate. We've had them in the past. We didn't get them this round. It's okay. We'll be watching and guessing with all of you. So this Friday live stream. Come hang out with us and let's talk Bad Batch. And of course, a lot of other things, Star Wars and beyond. We'll answer those questions too, but hang out this Friday on our YouTube page.
Yeah. We also like to catch up with our life in Star Wars adventures. Jennifer, what were your life in Star Wars adventures besides making the Jedi beat happen?
Yeah, that was basically it. That was it. And I think I stumbled upon some last minute photos and I'm like, oh, I've never seen that one before. How I had not seen that. I felt like I had seen every single photo possible.
Yeah,
nope.
Yeah.
Stumbled upon some more. And I'm just like, this is just the gift that keeps on giving. It's just really, really amazing. And I tried. I went up and down La Brea Avenue trying to find the studio where the reshoot happened. I believe that it no longer exists. I think I tried to do as much research online as well. And I even went, I was like, maybe I should just record on La Brea Avenue. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work.
I'm live at a thing that happened over 40 years ago in a building that probably isn't here anymore, but I'm live.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I'm like, there's no context. This is just weird. So I just went with some old footage that I found.
I love that. Probably like, yeah. I'm in front of this Chipotle restaurant. Inside is where.
Exactly. This is where the magic happened.
Yeah. Rick Baker. Oh, he's in there eating a burrito right now. Wow. Amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, I just want to – someday my only dream is to see George Lucas in a Sbarro. That's all I want.
My dream, too.
Maybe that'll be a Patreon goal. Like, if we can raise this much money, we'll go to every Sbarro in California trying to find George Lucas. Ken, yes. Did you have any adventures in Star Wars or Sbarros this weekend?
Unfortunately, no, with the Sbarros. I had three, and it's a – three-part kind of harmony. It's sad, happy, sad, and happy. sad part first. I had to make the decision, partly financial, partly storage, partly I'm just so far behind, I'm buried and overwhelmed. I did cut off my Star Wars comics, actually all my comics, Saga, some of the ones I'm reading. I had to head over to my shop, Earth 2 and Sherman Oaks, and just say, I can't do it anymore. I'm tapping out. I'm going to try to pick up the trades. There's other ways to do it. I get it. But it's sad. I've been supporting that shop for about 10 years. And I'll be there. But I just looked at my stack of comics. And it's not even about the quality. I have some thoughts on some of the stories that are out there now. Maybe they're not for me. But that's not what this is about. I can't catch up. And I had to kind of face that reality, you know?
Yeah, totally understandable. But that's the first beat of your pop song weekend of
that
sad.
That is sad, but then happy sad as I've been rewatching Bad Batch. And at the end of season one, it's been a while since I watched The Destruction of Kamino. And I some of those shots, it's haunting. And I got a little teary-eyed. And I thought, GD, this is why I love Star Wars, right? When you're just, I'm doing work. I've got it almost playing in the background. I'm watching. And then I just look up and I just was kind of moved about that moment and how this show made me cry for Kamino. Like, what a wonderful, painful, but wonderful thing they did. So that was happy, sad. And the final one, I want to shout out Scotty Jero of the Bombad podcast, who is a teacher. And he put together a 2-hour presentation. It's a teaching lesson on midichlorians. And it's a labor of love, too. He's been working on it for about 4 months. And I watched it last night while I was playing some Madden football. Scotty, it's wonderful. It's from his heart. It is an exploration of the ideas of the midichlorians and the kind of, weirder but very important side of Star Wars. And that made me happy. And also happy because I'm with y'all, too. M count is not enough. I want to hear midichlorians in new Star Wars. But also, again, we talk about the prequel generation. We're in this era, 25 years of Phantom Menace coming in May. And Scotty's part of that generation that was inspired by those films when others told them, nope, you shouldn't be. He was. And I really respect it. So great stuff, Scotty. Happy, happy news to round up my Star Wars adventures.
Yeah, no, I haven't had a chance to watch the video. I saw him posting about it, and I think like a timeline.
Never.
Kind of thing. I think so often when they get talked about, it's just a sort of discussion rehash of do you like them, do you not, and to kind of maybe put a little of that to the side and just dive in on here's what it means is great.
Mm. Yeah, now highly recommend it. The Bombad cast, he and Jerry are great cats. But I highly recommend the midichlorian deep dive.
Yeah. But,
that was my weekend. Joseph, you've got a reveal. You've got the reveal. What has happened?
I just had a lot of weekend. It just ended up everything piling up at once. And it was a little bit of, luckily not my entire life, but a little bit of This Is Your Life. I haven't had this much social time and been up this late in subsequent days in a long time. So on Friday, I went to the Doctor Who convention that happens here in Los Angeles, Gallifrey One. I was only able to be there for a day. My friend Paul Cornell, who people might know, is a writer of comic books and novels and some great episodes of Doctor Who, of the new series, always puts on this just comedy panel that's just totally like absolutely in the weeds Doctor Who jokes, and it's, you know, 18 plus and a little bit naughty and all that. And it was great fun. I was out at the Marriott until like the 1 a.m. And then on Saturday, my friend Bill Corbett came into town and we went to go see a theater play that our friend James Urbaniak was in and had some nice drinks then. And then yesterday, my friend from Minneapolis, who went to school out in Redlands, was in town. So we went to Redlands and hung out with him at various fun Redlands place and then played a war game in a hotel room until about 1 a.m. So it was just like three entirely different things are just also like, well, they all happened on this weekend. So, okay, let's go. So that's why my voice is a little bit raspy. I think out of all of that, the Star Wars adventure I had is just the great reminder of how important connection is. It's such a theme in Star Wars. It's what the midichlorians are about, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We're all connected through these things. Of just having that much social time with that many different people from different parts of my life, and just remembering how important it is to stay connected in times of great disconnection, people still coming out of the pandemic, social media being shattered, all those things. It was great to have connection.
Hear, 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 hear.
Nothing so important.
Nothing to add to that other than I feel you on that.
Yeah.
I feel you. Yeah. Well, a worthy cause to get a raspy voice.
Yeah. So fun. I'll live vicariously really through you.
I'll text the photos next time I'm out and about, Jen. Like, look at this. Oh. I'm on La Brea. Yeah. Live. All right. Well, we have two great questions this week. They are both Star Wars related, and they both, have us exploring some interesting ideas, including some prequel era stuff, which I think is going to be happening a lot in this 25th anniversary year for The Phantom Menace. Our first question comes to us from Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, hello, my tongue is partially in cheek here, but my question is Yoda all that? Is he deserving of the reverence he has both in and out of story? Or is he a dangerous withholder of information whose lies threaten the galaxy, all the while being propped up by strong PR and beautiful music? Looking at the evidence in the prequel trilogy, he chairs a council that lets a single, albeit highly intelligent, Sith rise to power while he continually hedges his bets and just comes across as pretty nonchalant until he beheads some clones. He also turns the heating off in the council chambers to psych out a 9-year-old. And then later in life tells that same kid not to mourn or miss a deceased loved one.
Wow.
In the original trilogy, Yoda withholds vital information from Luke to the extent he actually pretends to sleep, beats an R2-D2, and then hangs back until the snacks get whipped out in Bright Tree Village. This is like just total like old school insult comedy attack on Yoda. Oh, yeah, yeah. He hides until the treats come out.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not I get. Andrew finally says, I'll give him a pass for the sequel trilogy since he seems to acknowledge his own fault. Andrew also included some maybe nefarious hijinks that Yoda gets up to in phase two of the High Republic. Andrew kindly put a spoiler warning. So I'll be honest, Andrew, I didn't read that part because I'm trying to catch up on phase two of the High Republic. And I want to discover for myself how Yoda is being naughty in that era. But this is such a fun question. Obviously, really want to embrace that Andrew starts very clearly, tongue partially in cheek here. Definitely some legitimate potential criticisms of Yoda in this, but stated in a very funny, comedic way. Jennifer, where do you start with this? Is this a hard question for you just to begin with? Of like, hey, why are we coming at Yoda like this? Or is this like you're in agreement?
No, I'm not in agreement. It's something I've never thought of. No, and it's just funny. If you look at it on paper, it's like, this is a little green puppet, but it's all, you know, he's also a wise, powerful Jedi master. It's absurd. So let's just start there. Right. But that just totally changes everything. If he's withholding this, I think it's like with a parent, sometimes you got to let the kids figure it out on their own. They need to learn these lessons on their own. He's not like a god who's going to be a puppet master controlling everything. And some of the people are not on board. And he's like, I have concerns. And they're like, eh. So, you know, and plus it makes a better story.
Right.
So, but that's where I start. Yeah.
Okay. Ken, what's your big picture reaction to this question?
I was laughing here. I was laughing when I read this question in your rundown, Joseph. Andrew, tongue in cheek, I don't think you're wrong from a certain point of view, which is why I love this kind of Star Wars discussion. And I'll push it dangerously close to the real world, where for this past week, there's been an interesting discussion to be had about how far do you want to go in criticizing good-intentioned people that are in power who are not perfect, and especially compared to what might be on the other side. What is valid, what is concerning, and what is pushing too close to making Palpatine seem like the better choice in the next election. And it's a valuable discussion to have. And this makes me think of it. I agree with what you're saying, Jen. Yoda is not infallible. I wanted to have like, I saw this and I was like, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and maybe have a list of things like he did do. And you know what I said, as I always do, I'm going to feel it out here. I agree, Jen, that it is about Luke's got to figure out some stuff for himself. He's not going to maybe understand. He's holding that lightsaber up as ready to fight, and he's not getting it. And he might have to be, you know, he might have to face some things for himself to really understand. And maybe all the information at once isn't a good thing. You don't sit your daughters down right now and go, let me tell you everything about how the world works. Also, I think, and I'll release the talking stick here, the talking hammer, but going to the prequel stuff, I still think it's an example of things were changing rapidly around him. He was understanding it. He was getting it. He was saying there's problems. He's got, you know, mansplaining Ki-Adi Mundi at his side going, things are great. He's got Mace going, I think we should probably go kick some ass. And you don't necessarily have the answers right away is where I'll start.
I really agree with that starting place. I think some of these are these criticisms that Andrew has of our beloved Yoda are totally valid. Some of them are, you know, comically exaggerated. I'm gonna be a Yoda defender here. I don't think he turned off the heat in the council chambers.
No, I don't think he did either.
I think, you know, Anakin came from a warm planet and he felt cold. And if anything, hey, everybody on that Jedi Council is old. So if there's any sort of connection to the real world, not only is the heating turned up like to 90 degrees, but like every Jedi in there has like Werther's hard candies in their pocket. That would be my guess about the Jedi Council. Anyway, big picture on Yoda. I think what's wonderful about him is he is absolutely worthy of all of the praise we give him, but he is also flawed. And some of the praise is even more worthy because he is, I think, a mentor and a leader who is trying to come at things from the perspective of we can gain wisdom, we can learn from mistakes, but the future is always in motion and we're always just going to be trying our best and we're going to make some mistakes, Yoda included. We see him explicitly makes mistakes, learn from them, then kind of, hey, I learned that lesson with Anakin and with the Clone Wars, so now I'm almost going in the other direction with even more caution and fear and anxiety with Luke. And, oh, God, will I repeat my mistakes? But I think he continually demonstrates somebody who changes, who is willing to push past his fears, give something a chance, and then is, you know, pleasantly surprised that there is that he's not necessarily right about everything. You know, I think the whole Last Jedi scene Yoda trying to impart something to Luke that, hey, mistakes are part of what make us, and that isn't just him going like, yeah, Luke, you effed up. Did you learn from it? I think it's Yoda absolutely saying like, hey, remember when I doubted you and you made really, really good choices and made a difference? Like, everybody makes mistakes. It's okay. And I'm a part of that as well. So I feel like he is flawed and that's part of what makes him so great.
I love that Last Jedi moment being brought in as maybe one of the final statements from Yoda on all of Star Wars, right? I know his voice appears, and who knows if we'll get him more down the line. But if that's kind of, you know, the Sound of Enlightenment is his theme. He represents kind of home and security and training and enlightenment. But also what you're saying is he doesn't end with, see, just like I told you. He ends with, I was wrong, too, along the way. And that's the point. And that's they're going to grow past you as well. And that's part of change and what we have to do to let go. And I think that's a valuable final lesson. If it is Yoda's final lesson to kind of look back and go, yeah, here's what brought him here. And he's got a lot of successes, Andrew. He's got a lot of successes. Like back of a baseball card. He's got good stats.
Yeah. I want to ask you both about this, too, because I think it's something that maybe people might struggle with, particularly depending on when you met Yoda. And from what perspective, I met him in Empire Strikes Back. And then, you know, I had years to go like, do you think Yoda ever had a lightsaber? And now like, yes, on every image of him, he's got his lightsaber out. Right. But there is this kind of contrast in that he is extremely kind, funny, lovable, kind of, I think, relatable to children because he's also just like a little weirdo. Like, that's why I liked him as a kid. It's like, oh, he's a little weirdo like me. But then he is also like a pretty deep believer in the Jedi path of sacrifice. And sometimes you gotta let go and do things that you don't want to do. Sometimes you gotta sacrifice, you know, he tells Luke that, well, Han and Leia might need to sacrifice themselves for the bigger picture. That's too bad. That contrast between this like funny, lovable, he's making jokes, he's telling clones that they're all unique in the Force, but when the time comes, he'll take their head off. You know, that contrast between if you even just like did a smash cut of him in that Clone Wars episode saying you're all unique in the Force to him, you know, cutting their heads off in Revenge of the Sith. Jennifer, for you, is that like this character isn't coherent, or is this is a character with contrast? He's fun and lovable, but he's also like a deep, true believer in his ways.
Yes, I think that's what makes him so powerful is he's been around the block. He's seen a lot of things and he knows when he needs to get down to business or be serious and get the job done, right? I always kind of saw him like a grandparent where he's fun, he can have funny moments, and you know that he knows the answer, but he's not going to give it to you. And he's going to make you, and you're like, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And it's like, well, you got to figure this out for yourself. Or like you're saying in The Last Jedi, like, yeah, you know, I made mistakes. He's willing to kind of tell us, give us guidance in a way that's best learned, right? The lessons best learned are not taught. And that's why I always related to him. And I saw, well, my grandparents were not like that, but that's how I saw him, like grandparent type figure.
Yeah, but that sort of teaching mentor advice and style of like kind of point your student toward the door, but they have to walk through it themselves in order to learn. Yeah, and he's definitely got that style. Yeah, absolutely. Ken, how do you wrestle with the sort of the lovable, charming, kind, funny Yoda with the like, yep, hey, people die, you know, move on. A more hardcore Yoda.
Yeah, and we had a great discussion a couple of years ago on that particular moment, right? You and I broke that down. I don't remember all the words we said, but I love you talked about when we met him. For me, Return of the Jedi, really, but Empire as well. It's all kind of a mishmash, hodgepodge of one memory, you know, squeezed together there. He was lovable. He was funny. He was stealing food. He also scared the hell out of me when he turns to Luke and goes, "You will be like that." So the two sides of Yoda were on display my entire life. I think I got him. And I, you know, there is another, and he was multi-layered from the start for me, whether or not I was fully engaged or not. I didn't see him. You know, I spent most of the 80s going, let Luke run off to Cloud City and be a hero, because that's what I thought. And now we've had several, you know, deeper discussions on what that means and everything. But in that moment, I was like, Yoda, buddy, you're wrong. Like, Luke's got to go do what Luke's got to do. And so Luke needed to learn that. I needed to learn that later on, even as a fan of, there's different ways to approach it. So Yoda's got he's all around, and I do look up to him, and I do love the character, and I do consider him not all knowing, but definitely somewhat all understanding in a way.
Yeah, no, and I think including his own humanity or whatever he is,
frogmanity.
he comes from a pod on Yothon, is what we have made up our headcanon, whatever that means.
I like it.
Yes, yes. A tree just opens and a Yoda falls out.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I walked through a little bit of like his actual, you know, his life in narrative sequential order, because I do think that the prequels don't belabor it. But I think if we look at like his actions, that we do see a change. And I'm curious what you both think about it. Like Phantom Menace, I think he is a little bit more rigid, you know. He is a little hard on Anakin, and he lets the rest of the council be hard on this poor kid who misses his mother. I like to think about it that some of Yoda's attitude in The Phantom Menace is more about Qui-Gon. Like, Yoda's got a lot on his plate. He's managing everything. And here comes Qui-Gon with like, the Sith is what we should be talking about. Who did you encounter? That's a big problem. And you're like, you know, the whole more to say, have you revealed your opinion? It really feels like Anakin is partially caught in the crossfire of Yoda being like, "God damn, Qui-Gon again!"
Right?
But I also think his wisdom is really—he is delivering it in a harsher way and in a colder way, and in a way that feels like you're not being really warm and kind to this scared young child. And I get that criticism, but his wisdom is so spot on. Of the fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. You know, people of our era poked fun at that and kind of made early memes out of that, but it unlocks so much. It's one of those like basic kind of observations about life that's baked into Star Wars that is just made crystal clear by that line. And so I think he deserves some credit, even though he's a little cold in Phantom Menace, of like what he's saying is really, really great. And if Anakin had been able to hear it more, it might have helped, since that is the exact path. That's exactly what happens to Anakin.
I think it's a great point to find out that they were fighting Qui-Gon and Yoda, and that it was like basically like, Qui-Gon, you've been hitting the prophecies again. You've been taking a hit on prophecies because you seem to be lost in the wilderness, and representing George's big overall take on the Jedi Order, that it should not necessarily go away, but what it is now is not what it had been started out as, and Yoda was there for so much of that, and so he would represent kind of that like, we got this. Oh wait, maybe we don't. Oh yeah, we definitely don't. And that's part of Yoda being a a character himself, right? He's a mentor to everyone else, but he wakes up every day with aches and pains and wishes and desires and fears. So he's got to deal with it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had heard this explanation of it when I first saw The Phantom Menace, because for me, I didn't feel like Yoda. I was like, that's not the Yoda that I grew up with, that I know. He's so serious. He's not, right? He's not as welcoming. But I'll relate this to my mother, who was really tough when I was growing up, really tough on me. The way that she is with my daughters is a different person. They're like, Grandma would never do that. She's like softened with age. And that's kind of how I maybe see Yoda, as we catch him in this moment, right? The Phantom Menace, where he's tough.
I think so too. And I think that's just part of the reason that I kind of wanted to talk through it in order of some of the beats that we see of him, because I think that was also a prequel talking point. Well, that's not the Yoda I know. And like, well, yeah, it's long before, and he hasn't had some of the experiences that shaped him. And Jennifer, to your great grandparent analogy, is like the Yoda we meet in Empire Strikes Back is like a grandparent who's been in retirement, a rough retirement, and maybe they're living in a cabin out in the woods and kind of disappointed about life, but they've been retired. And that's the grandparent you know. And then imagine if that's the grandparent you know, and then you could jump, you know, 30 years earlier and see them at their high stress business meeting.
Right.
They would not be behaving the same. And that's the contrast. He's like the CEO at a board meeting grandparent versus the I'm just building a fire, making you stew out in my cabin in the woods grandparent. There's going to be a different vibe.
This is perhaps too real. I've shared my story with my grandparents, but yeah, it's me in the 80s being told, Kenny, eat your food. And flashback to them leaving the USSR with no food on their shelves or in their bags and trying to escape Stalin's Russia. Like, yeah, they're not going to be like, you need to eat because Stalin takes your food. Like, they're just like, hey, be thankful for what you have. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then moving on to Attack the Clones, this is some of like top tier Yoda content for me, because I think he is so much more, playful. He's kind with the kids. The whole scene of Obi-Wan having this problem of, well, the archives say it isn't there and everyone else is being rigid about it. And Yoda is now a little bit, I think, closer to the way we see him in Empire Strikes Back, of kind of preaching the, you know, unlearn what you have learned, look at it from a different perspective. The truly wonderful the mind of a child is so like the answers may be really clear if we're not so uptight, if we're not so rigid, like I was in the previous movie. Is almost what Yoda is saying, and he does go along with the war. He makes that mistake. It is his apprentice who fell to the dark side who's doing it, and I think Yoda feels a responsibility there, but also in that film he knows it's a loss and he's already kind of moving away from the rest of the council. So I feel like we're already seeing him grow from a little bit more cold and rigid in Phantom Menace in Attack of the Clones. Ken, how do you feel about the difference of Yoda's there?
Absolutely. I think you're tracking what we're really trying to get at here, which is the growth, the evolution, the change, the failure forming Yoda as he moves forward. I know Jen, being a leader of 1999's Not My Yoda movement, I'm curious to see how you feel about Attack of the Clones, but I think that the moment with Liam in the shades and all that stuff is a powerful moment of enlightenment, especially what we've tracked with the Dexter Diner scene and all the stuff packaged around that of Obi-Wan's getting cold, sterile responses from Jedi Order droids and analysis. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big points of going and seeking the comfort and true information there from Dexter. And Yoda is on the way. And you're right. I love the final moments in Attack of Clones with Yoda being like, victory? What are you talking about? This is a loss. Like, I did not spend a lot of time with that in 2002. I spend a lot of time with that now, of that's where Yoda is there in that moment.
Yeah, realizing like, oh man, we spent too long meditating on things, thinking about things, being really cautious, and now that has escalated to a point that it's going to be painful no matter what. Jennifer, how do you feel about Attack of the Clones Yoda?
I really like Attack of the Yodas. I like it. And I remember being in the theater and feeling like, okay, this is more in line with the Yoda than I know. I love that scene where he really empowers the kids, right? Like, and he doesn't talk down to them. And that's where I felt like, oh, this is my Yoda. I had some other issues with Attack of the Clones, but it's actually now one of my favorites. Although I love Revenge of the Sith as well. But I love the second one. So, I don't know.
I that kindness with the kids, and also like the teasing Obi-Wan of losing a planet. And how embarrassing!
Is
really also being like, hey, look, you know, adults can, you know, make mistakes too. It's so great. Mm-hmm. And when he calls the cane back to himself and is pretty sore after his fight with Dooku, is also top tier Yoda content. Yeah. So moving on to Revenge of the Sith, and one of the other points that that Andrew makes, it does seem like, you know, Yoda is aware of his failures by the end of the film. But Jennifer, how do you feel about the counseling that he gives to Anakin of, you know, mourn them, do not miss them, do not, you know, rejoice for those who have passed into the Force?
I don't even remember. Yeah. This is where I'm like, what in the world? Like, how can I not remember? I've seen this movie, I don't know how many times. How many times? It's just like, boom, it goes away. It goes away. Remind me. talk amongst yourselves while I remember.
Anakin's having the premonitions about Padme dying in childbirth. And I think Anakin is kind of trying to reach out for help, but not willing to open up and be honest about the whole thing. And I see the scene as Yoda trying to be kind of generous, because basically Anakin's coming to him and saying, I'm having visions. And Yoda's like, I got to be careful with those. And there's also this little dance where he's like, where Yoda asks him, well, is this about someone you care about? And Anakin's like, yeah. And like, there isn't a follow up there of like, is it Obi-Wan? there's a little bit of like, maybe some stuff going on with Anakin that maybe Yoda could have followed up on. But I feel like in that moment, it's like, trying to give you the counseling. But I mean, he gives him the counseling that I think, you know, we've heard a lot from listeners too, who have different strong opinions about it. Is either it's too cold or it's good advice. That Yoda is basically saying, you need to train yourself to let go of people. If it is their time to pass, you need to be focused on what is, you know, good for them, what is right for their life, what is natural. It's, you know, he calls it the shadow of greed trying to sort of possess someone. And so he's kind of, I think he's getting to the heart of what's going on with Anakin of like, yes, of course, none of us want to lose a loved one. But what I'm sensing is you're focused on your pain and how to avoid your pain, as opposed to what's happening with this person. And is it their time? Is it natural? You know, and I get it. My take on it is his advice is solid and it comes off cold. And I think it's why it doesn't help Anakin. I think if it was a more grandparently, like, let's talk, what's really going on? Who are you in a relationship with? You know, I know this is really hard. It feels a little like he's just like, you know, these are the basics. I'm telling you the basics again. You got to let go of people. You can't be possessive of other people.
Yeah.
Maybe it's frustration. Maybe he's tired. And he sees that Anakin really needs that distance. He really needs to cut this off, because otherwise, you know, it's not going to be good. So he's trying to give him the hard truth. But some kids, you need to do it in a gentler way. Anakin is one of those kids.
Ken, what are your thoughts on that Revenge of the Sith monologue?
Yeah, we had a great discussion on it. I should have listened to it again. I can't even remember the good points I thought I made in that episode, but I think it all comes down to what you're talking about, Joseph, which is, there's no part of Yoda that says, losing someone isn't sad. But you are essentially what I call this negative attachment. Your feelings of loss are in front of their existence, and therefore it can kind of become, if you're not careful, a trap, and it's going to destroy you. It could eventually destroy them, and it's not the right way to do it. And you know, we joked during Other Center, the height of Other Center was essentially parent center and mom center, and this is something I had fought with a very over controlling mother growing up, and this scene in our analysis, the scene kind of helped me understand that kind of stuff. So Yoda's saying some absolutely spot on stuff, but Anakin has a right to think, man, they treated me a little cold and sterile all the way through this from the beginning. And that's part of maybe what Yoda's saying, and could factor in a little bit to when he reappears with Luke and is, you know, hey, ever thought that you're sometimes a little cold and distant there, old Master Skywalker? And there's different ways to approach it. I think that's all is kind of in there as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. then, you know, in terms of, you know, rating Yoda's success rate, he doesn't think he had a really great record here in the prequel era. Mm-hmm. That the failed I have line when he gets in Bail Speeder.
Right.
I think one of Frank Oz's greatest delivery, the mm-hmm. animator's greatest action. He's stripped of his robe, so he looks kind of like naked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
just yeah. like the failed I have is to me is like it isn't just I didn't defeat Sidious. It's I failed entirely across the board. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, how do you take that failed I have? Is that for you like a big thing? Is that Yoda talking about everything?
Yeah, it felt very devastating. I without the robe, I remember that. Yeah, it's just a sad, sad moment for our hero and somebody that I was a child. I was like, he can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. And we really see a very different arc in the prequel trilogy. And mm-hmm. it's kind of hard to watch, right? But it's an important story to tell.
Yeah. Ken, how do you feel about the failed I have?
It's one of my favorite moments. And I felt in 2005, I kind of was like, oh, Yoda, that's self-loathing. Stop that. Stop that. But I think I see it as a failed in that moment and a fail for the previous, you know, 20 years, 15, 20 years, whatever it is. It all comes crushing down on him in that moment. It is that you look back. Sometimes you look back and go, oh, I'm here because of this. Oh, that's great. Life took me where it needs to go. Otherwise, you look back and go, oh, that was mistake one. That was mistake two. And I think it all kind of comes crushing down on him. And therefore, it's one of the more, again, I'll say the term human, but it's one of the more, human, real character moments with Yoda. And I'm with you, too. It's one of the best Frank Oz deliveries.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason I wanted to spend just a moment on it is I totally think he's doing exactly what you're describing, Ken, and much like in Andrew's question, I think Yoda is listing off mistake number one. I allowed the order to become too rigid. Mistake number two, I didn't follow up on the Sith the way that I should have. Blah, blah, blah. We all know the failures. But I think that is the point of the original trilogy is all of his interactions with Luke are about him, to me, processing that failure. He learned his lesson that wars really do not make one great. He always had that attitude, but then he let himself get pulled into the Clone Wars and it failed because it was just all it did was feed the dark side from his perspective. After you spend time with the prequels and everything that Yoda went through, including the advice he gave Anakin that Anakin did not listen to, all of Yoda's grumpiness and doubt of, you know, I can't teach him, you know, is so understandable and relatable. He has every legitimate reason to go, oh, great, Anakin 2.0. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same attitude, reckless, full of adventure, connected to his friends. Jennifer, do you process watching like Empire Strikes Back Yoda in the way he handles Luke differently? Would you keep in mind everything that Yoda's actually been through in the prequels?
Absolutely. Again, I go back to the grandparent thing, because when you're a parent and you're in the trenches, you're like, don't do this, don't do that. You're much more rigid. And then what I've seen with my mom, she's like, oh, she's a free spirit. Oh, she's I'm like, what? Free spirit? Right here, you know, and because you learn that life is not going to go, it's an improvisation. It's free flowing. And you learn that the more that you try to control something, the more bad things can happen.
I really like that perspective, because I think what's powerful to me about Yoda's choices in the original trilogy and why I think he does deserve the respect that we give him is he absolutely could have just stuck to his guns and said, nope, Luke's too much like his father. He is just going to make things work. But he's like, all right, I got a lot of concerns, but I'll train him. Oh, he did exactly what I said he was going to do. He ran off, but Yoda seems proud of Luke when he comes back in Return of the Jedi. Mm. Like, knowing that he still has farther to go, but like, exactly what you're saying, Jen, of it. Life's an improvisation, and I wasn't rigid. I had lots of reasons to be afraid that this wouldn't work, but I let it play out and gave this kid a chance to surprise me. He's a free spirit, this Luke Skywalker. Ken, how do you feel about Yoda's perspective in the original trilogy when you kind of compare it to what he's actually been through chronologically?
I think it is the sum of a lot of parts. It is a journey that has brought a lot of earned respect and a lot of earned wisdom. And now he's in a troubled time trying to find the best way forward. And I laughed really hard when Andrew sent this in of just him turning, pulling the blanket up and turning and rest. I feel it. I think there's, you know, Yoda realizes the end is near and there's a lot of peace. There's maybe a lot of still frustration ideas, but I just love he's just got a warmth to him that I've always been mm-hmm. pulled to. And I think him, you know, as Luke comes back and is like, oops, sorry. That went wrong, right? And Yoda's not like, yeah, I told you, dummy. He's just like you said, like, all right, yeah, but yeah, failure. But tomorrow is the new day, and I've always taken that to heart from that stuff. So I love Grandpa Yoda.
Yeah, I really, really agree with that. And the way Andrew phrased it is very funny. And I think it's a great thing criticize him for, of like, yeah, that doesn't seem like we think of Yoda as like wise mentor, not, ooh, that makes me uncomfortable, so I'm going to change the subject by literally turning away from you and pulling the blanket up to my chin. It's very funny to look at it from that perspective, but I think what is powerful about it is, I think, in my mind, Yoda has held on to this mortal plane to have this last conversation with Luke. I think he's treating Luke much more like Empire Strikes Back was like, oh, you're 18 and you're reckless. I know this is not actual his age, but that's the attitude mm-hmm. of like, you're a kid.
Yeah.
Now, when he comes back in Return of the Jedi, there's a little bit of like, I can speak to you as an adult. And even the mm-hmm. turning away is it's kind. And it's like he's feeling for Luke when he turns back mm-hmm. and, you know, Luke gets mad and says, like, you know, unfortunate that I know the truth. And you know, it's like, no, not that, not yet ready for the burden, were you?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly mm-hmm. kind. And he's just like, mm-hmm. I got to bounce. Luke, you're doing surprisingly well.
Yeah.
You got to face your father, whatever that means. Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi, and I believe in you, but I really feel for you. That whole thing is, to me, is Yoda actually being extremely warm. It's because Yoda feels bad. Like, to go to the grandparent metaphor again, like, I'm going to give, you know, my grandchild the best advice, but I know they got to go do a really hard thing. And, like, mm-hmm. you're going to be wounded. It's going to be hard. And it's hard for me as your grandparent to go, yep, you got to go run into that fire.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other big Yoda thoughts, Ken?
Oh, this is also hilarious. Andrew, very well written. I was laughing all the way through it. I love these kind of Star Wars bar discussions. And I've had them too, especially around 2002, yelling at my friend, the Jedi or the bad guy, you know, and then Star Wars, the conversations, you know, beg you to go a little deeper. But I'll say this. Yoda has never declared all that am I. He has not done that. Everyone else around him has. And sometimes we see this example. Sometimes a man with a cowboy hat writes some things you love and everyone, you know, has him ascend to a throne that he might not even want. I've seen this in executive production where I was, me and some guards were told to look at the ground because we're not paying you to look at that artist. The artist didn't say that. The people around the artist said that. So sometimes the hype isn't from the hyped. And mm-hmm. I'm going to give Yoda the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I deeply agree. I think to answer Andrew's fundamental question, in my opinion, yes, Yoda deserves the hype because he does make a lot of mistakes. He is like the Jedi. What I like about him is that he is flawed. He does make mistakes, but he keeps striving to learn from his mistakes and be open to different ideas and make a better choice the next time around. And I think that's all we can really ask of mentors, of like, here's what I learned. Maybe it'll help you. Oh, no, it didn't. let me learn and adapt and be open to change, you know, even when I'm hundreds of years old. Jennifer, what are your final Yoda thoughts?
I love that from a certain point of view, anyone, even my beloved Yoda, could be a villain. But that's what makes Star Wars so fun is that these characters do have such a long history and you can really pick apart, quite frankly, anything. This was a fun, fun discussion. And it makes me want to rewatch the prequel trilogy. I really need to do that.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully they'll put them all out in theaters. Well, we are going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with another question back in a moment.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back. We are going to dive into a question from Brian Babcock. Brian says, "Hello, Force Center friends. Having just rewatched the prequels for the millionth time, I was curious, before the prequels were made, did you have any thoughts or interpretations of events that happened before A New Hope that the prequels all but nullified? For example, when I was a kid, seeing Vader's helmet removed and seeing just how mutilated he was, I always thought it was the Emperor that did that to him, causing Vader extreme torment, which caused Vader to tap into the dark side and never look back. I never thought he already turned evil before getting put in the suit, and that it was his own friend and master that put him in it. I also thought the Clone Wars had a bunch of different people cloning themselves to fight a war against other people cloning themselves, not one guy getting cloned a million times to fight droids. While I love the prequels, I'm sure I'm not alone in having plenty of that's not how I thought that should have played out feelings as I watched them for the first time. So I was curious if you have any similar memories that stick out in your mind. As always, thanks for reading, and may the Force be with you. Ken, this is something we've definitely touched on before. Mm-hmm. This is definitely the long Gen X, and I'm sure other people, but certainly our generation, process of processing the prequels. Where do you go with this?
Well, first I'll say, during this era post original trilogy, I spent a lot of time wondering about episode seven, post episode six. I've joked about this, but that's why the expectations of Force Awakens were just almost impossible to to climb over. And I think that's why the film succeeded in my mind in that, because I, for as soon as, you know, June 1983, I was like, all right, Han and Leia got me. They have a kid. I'm going to play the kid and we're going to be on this. And we got to invade Jabba's palace. I had this whole thing, and I live near Pismo Beach. So we'd go out to the sand dunes, and I either with the figures or myself would reenact what I had in my head. I'm glad it didn't happen. Glad that script didn't get written and made. But that said, as I wondered about those stories. The Return of the Jedi novel has the you know, Vader and Kenobi fighting on a lava planet. So I always want to see that. That was part of the joy of Revenge of the Sith for me. I was one of the ones that had, I think my vision of the Clone Wars that Kenobi mentioned were probably action-wise more in line with the Tartakovsky Clone Wars series. Not that there wasn't great action in the one that came after, of course, on Cartoon Network, but where it was just wall-to-wall action. I didn't even conceive politics. Like, what are you talking about? What would trade federation? Like, and so that's why in 99 you sit down and you're like, no, it's all badass action. And I'm not, as we always have discussions, Star Wars has a place for cool, badass action. And I always want it to be there. There's no way I could have anticipated the political side of it. So that I spent a lot of time that. And I was in on the theory by early 90s, mid 90s stuff. And I remember there's a few articles once even the prequels got announced. Of, well, Clone Wars, Obi-Wan Kenobi. So that meant there might be Obi-2 Kenobi, Obi-3 Kenobi. And like that was kind of the thing. And I was in on that kind of stuff. But I just saw it, I didn't see it as you know, separatists and Republic. I just saw it as a fight over, you know, perhaps even cloning. There might have been a war of clones on every side.
The Obi-Wan thing I forgot about that people right. like, and with the spelling being different, it's so like wild. Conspiracy theory to me.
Yeah.
Jennifer, what was your expectation of the Clone Wars? And then we can get into more stuff. But what did you think the Clone Wars were?
I had no idea. I couldn't even come up with an idea, because I was so focused on what was happening afterwards. I was just like, oh, it's all about what happens next. If I even tried to think about what happened before, I would have envisioned a swashbuckling adventure, like you're saying, wall-to-wall action, no idea, politics, no. And so that's why, me too, when I sat in The Phantom Menace, I'm like, what is this? No, yeah. This is not what I've been waiting for, even though I hadn't envisioned too deeply anything, quite frankly.
I didn't come in with a laundry list, and I know that's not what Brian's suggesting, but I just remember thinking, well, that wasn't it.
No, yeah, that wasn't what I would have thought it would have been.
Yeah.
I think for me, the Clone Wars thoughts really cemented watching A New Hope on VHS again and again, and just getting more and more fascinated by that scene. And like the Obi-Wan and Kenobi's hut scene for me was like, well, that's the teaser trailer for the prequels. And I'm getting so excited for kind of everything that I get out of that sense of like, he was a general in the wars and he was best friends with Anakin, and Anakin was an amazing pilot, and like all that was so like, that's the prequels, that's what I'm excited for. But the Clone Wars again and again, I think I just assumed, maybe somebody on the playground claimed it was true, I don't know, but I entirely assumed that it was about the morality or legality of cloning. Like
right.
I wasn't like, well, of course it's clones fighting. I was like, well, half the galaxy wants to clone people and the other half are saying we can't. And we're fighting over that moral question.
Right.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Had a lot of that feeling, actually. I'd love to go back to those playground conversations where we're sitting there going, all right, here's the moral dilemma of cloning.
Yeah.
Another thing you said in terms, Joseph, of things of like, yeah, that hut scene, you're right. It is a bit of a teaser trailer for the prequels if you look at it from a certain point of view. And I definitely had the Obi-Wan, a little bit of how Revenge of the Sith starts might have been what I thought episode one was going to be, right? And like, these buddies, they're flying around, they're young Anakin. And so the decisions start young, and George has talked about it. You know, the studio going, you can't have a kid do it. And why I think, you know, retroactively, I look back at Jake Lloyd's performance, and he's so key to the building blocks of Vader to come in these little great moments. Talk about Yoda, and I mean, Cold Sir. It's one of the best prequel lines, as we look 25 years back, let's not forget Jake Lloyd's place. And I know we don't here. So I had a lot of that going in. And so that was the curveball of, you know, even by the teaser poster comes out, and it's an amazing teaser poster, right? But it's even then it's like, oh, okay. Okay. And final, like, I think we talked about before, like the way Alec Guinness is wistfully and, you know, a little pain looking off when he's talking to Luke when he first sees him around the Tuscans. I thought this was 60 years ago. And not doing the math of, well, it can't be more than 19 or as right. part of the story.
Right.
Well, I mean, we kind of didn't – I think there – I can't remember when Lucas said things about the actual timeline. Because yeah. I think I remember being unclear of like, well, you know, exactly when did Anakin fall? Did he already have the kids? Was it before or after they were born? I remember being kind of unclear about all of yeah. that timeline. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah. still, you know, as I get older, that one is almost more continues to become more funny to me that it is only the 19 years. Like, because growing up, the weight.
It's oh, yeah. Funny. Oh, oh yeah.
Long time. Like, right. like what? So we're 2024. So what is, what's not, I'm very tired. What is 19 years ago now?
19 years ago. Okay. What? 2007, around 2006. I just had a memory of me and Roddy Piper being on stage together. It was 14 long years ago. So yeah.
Right.
Imagine. So 2005.
Imagine,
like, yeah. 2005, right? So like, yeah. imagine, you know, you're saying like, oh, it's a long time ago. Remember when Ocean's 12 came out? Long time ago. Like from our pop culture memory and life memory, particularly as you get older, it's such a short time to have the weight behind it. And there's all that business about where'd you dig up that fossil? And he's like, he's so young.
Yeah. The only thing I can say is that, like, when I look at pictures of me prior to having kids, like going to bars, riding bikes, doing all this fun stuff around Los Angeles, I'm like, that's a long time ago. I was a different person. Oh yeah, my that's, gosh.
That's yeah. Obi-Wan's joints talking when he's like, that was a long time ago, according to my back. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Another thing I want to factor in too is of course perhaps the most famous change up of lore in canon from George himself is Leia and talking about her mother. I mean, that one I just assumed, like, well, it was said she talked to Leia, hung out with her, like was there. Mm-hmm. So and I think it's been answered well enough in modern canon and whatnot, but hard to say that one didn't throw me for a loop.
Yeah, the idea that Leia had visions, you know, of Padme is beautiful and great, and I think fans headcanoned that, and then it's popped up in various publishing and all that. So there's definitely some things where like George is like, no, I'm going to tell him a story the way I want to, but the biggest thing for me is I think for me in the prequels, everything works from a certain point of view. But I had all of these assumptions and all of this baggage. It's like a very Star Wars thing of like, when I saw the prequels, I had to, you know, unlearn what I had learned. I had to look at it with the blast shield down. I had to be open to maybe I am being rigid in the way I have decided to see it and realizing all this stuff that I am sort of like pounding the table of, but this is the way it is. It was not said. I read it between the lines, and that's, I think it was a valid interpretation of the original trilogy, but then also there's this great lesson of being open to maybe it's not. And I think for me, those big things were it's just the way Obi-Wan talked about, you know, when I first met Anakin, I just really took the Jedi as totally nomadic of like, you would wander, you would maybe be like, I want to become a Jedi and I've heard that they're on this distant planet. So I'll strike out and go on this, you know, quest to find one, and then I'll wander the galaxy, you know, helping people. And then if I bump into a force sensitive kid, I'll decide whether or not I want to train them in the way that, you know, I thought I could train him as well as Yoda. To me, I just had this whole headcanon of like, Obi-Wan was a young man, went on a quest, found Yoda. Yoda taught him. Then Obi-Wan's going around the galaxy. He finds Anakin, like all of that stuff about the way the Jedi were, that they had this rigid structure and there's a master and a Padawan and Yoda taught Obi-Wan because Yoda taught every, you know, kid in the school in the Jedi Temple. All that stuff that like
to me, it matches perfectly fine.
Yeah.
The original trilogy now, but I had to sort of unlearn what I had assumed about the Jedi. That was my biggest bump.
I'm right there with you. Looking back, is now I'd refer to them as hedge knights, born heavily from the Game of Thrones world of, nomadic, traveling the world. And George was like, no, it's the director's guild. That's what they are. But there's a part of that I love. And even in Star Wars Visions, I think they tapped into some of that vibe and feeling. And I think you could still explore that maybe even going forward. But at the end of the day, a Jedi order in which you could base a lot of these lessons and stories from is still one of my favorite decisions.
Yeah. And I mean, Jennifer, what were your thoughts on? Did you also think the Jedi were kind of nomadic?
I had never thought about it until you just said that. And I think that was a big issue for me because going into the prequels, as I just said, I'm a free spirit, right? For me, all these rules, all the, you got, and the midichlorians and I'm like, I can't remember all of this. This doesn't seem like the Star Wars that I knew, going back to the Yoda thing, which felt very free flowing, almost hippie-ish, right? This was a total opposite of that in the prequels. And so I really had a hard time. Now I can appreciate it. Now I understand why those building blocks are important for the rest of the Star Wars stories. But at the time, I was just like, no, give me the hippie Jedi that I always thought existed.
Yeah. And I think for me, that is one of the things that definitely was challenging and I think continues to be a conversation among fans who have strong opinions about maybe the Jedi aren't the heroes. And for me, it was, I think, and this is my opinion, that Lucas has always thought of the Jedi as heroes, but he treats heroes as flawed. They make mistakes and they have to correct, like we talked about with Yoda. And I think he went to the prequels with, so like, everybody gets the Jedi are heroes, right? So now I want to tell the story about how a galaxy fell. And I'm asking myself, how could heroes like the Jedi let this happen? What kind of mistake could they lean into? And Lucas, with all of his, running into issues with the Directors Guild, running into the issues with the rigidness of Hollywood, it needs to be structured exactly this way. He has this huge, on one side, huge belief in community and connection, and we're all in this together. But then organizations can rot that with rigidity and selfishness and, all this thing. So I think he comes at it, in my mind, from the perspective of everybody understands the Jedi are heroes, so I need a way to show how they could fall. And the way they fall is it would become overly rigid organization that's too into themselves, too cocky, too obsessed with their own rules. That's how these heroes made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the story. And I still want more stories where it's like, the Jedi are just the heroes, period. and we get a lot more of that in the High Republic. They're flawed and they're going to make mistakes, but they're the heroes. Mm. Walking a difficult path.
I'd love it. I always have to just not respond to that because I that could spawn another hour here. But, the Justice for the Jedi movement here, Force Center, that Joseph, you're the first to say those words here. It's a fascinating time because I think more fans are aware of their own journeys, their own traumas, their own struggles. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I don't want to say this like a grumpy jerk. Like, I don't, you might be assigning some of it to the Jedi, and that's there. But I think what you just said about George going, we got their heroes, right? So how would heroes fall? Let's analyze that. Let's answer that. Let's discuss that. It does not mean that at some point they haven't done heroic things. And it is the multiple truth approach to it. It is Yoda being flawed, but also being all that. And I'm fascinated by the discussions and fascinated by where people take it. But I do bristle. I'm getting ready for Embracing for Impact. I'm so excited for The Acolyte. And it's going to dig into this a bit. And it's going to dig into it with Leslie Headland being a prequel kid and having her own journey and her own quest to move out from underneath oppressive systems and systems of harm in her own life. And I think we're going to have a great analysis of the Jedi Order as they're about to fall, and it's going to spawn some maybe at times spirited discussions about the Jedi and who they are.
I will say this, and we can move on so we don't just turn into a Justice for Jedi. I also feel strongly that Qui-Gon was the, like, he wasn't, a gray Jedi who was this rogue. he was staying kind of true to the core beliefs that were getting mucked up by the rigidity mm-hmm. of the order. So the, mm-hmm. to me, the whole idea is he's not a gray Jedi walking his own path. He is going, these rules are here to keep us in this general path. And it is the spirit of the rules that matter, not the rigidity of them. And so we need to be open to surprises and changes. Prophecies mm-hmm. are dangerous, but I believe this one. So we can't be rigid and just say prophecy bad. Mm-hmm. What if this one is true? Let's explore mm-hmm. it. This is a human child. We need to be kind to him. Yes, training him now breaks our rules, but he's here. And we can't ignore him, and we need to be kind to him. That all stuff is him staying true to the Jedi mm-hmm. and proving the Jedi are heroes. And it's mm-hmm. The Jedi aren't villains. Ki-Adi Mundi has a giant stick all the way up to his two brains. That's the that's the problem.
He's a political idealist.
So wrong. So few yeah. scenes. They're so wrong so many times. Jennifer, any other thoughts on kind of balancing the expectations you had going into the prequels with?
What was there? Brian makes a great point about Vader and Vader's appearance. I'll never forget when I saw Vader's face for the first time as a child and just being terrified by his appearance. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what the dark side does to you? I don't want to do that. And I too believed that it was, well, that maybe it was the Emperor, but also just like, these were his battle scars, right? Mm-hmm. So when we saw in Revenge of the Sith that he was like a younger person, and it was so different than what I imagined, but it made so much sense. And that was a moment where I was like, you know what? I'm not George Lucas. I cannot come up with a better story or a better ending. And wow, was that powerful. I mean, people, it was like, I remember the theater, there was gasps, but also mm-hmm. some cheers, because it was like, yay, we're finally, oh God, this is painful. It was such a mix of emotions.
Yeah. I remember being just both expecting it and also being kind of truly shocked by like the suddenness and the horror of it. I think I always kind of expected like he fell from a high place, and
yeah.
It's like, right. I don't know if I really wanted the alternative, like Obi-Wan takes one arm, then 15 yeah. more minutes of fighting, then a leg, like some like horrible Monty Python sketch of Anakin slowly coming apart, you know?
Right. Well, I love about that too. For Sebastian Shaw, like that was, there's again, the math doesn't necessarily add up, and George had a chance to revisit it, but it's funny now to be as a kid in 1983 and thinking, look at that old man. And he's just in his early 40s. But that's what you think the 40s are when you're 7 years old.
So true.
Oh, I mean, when I was so young, he was like, well, it's really sad that Darth Vader died, but he was probably going to go soon anyway. I mean, look how old he is. Like, it's horrible.
Like 97. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Love it.
Yeah. I think that's all great stuff. I read the Return of the Jedi novelization when I was a kid, but somewhere along the line, I forgot that the volcano stuff was in there. Mm. And the Darth Vader was scarred by a battle on a volcano planet with his former master, Obi-Wan Kenobi, mm-hmm. was on the back of one of the Power of the Force 2 cards.
Oh, wow. And
so like in the late 90s, that was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember just, I couldn't wait. When people were down on the prequels, like after Attack of the Clones, and people were like, I don't even know if I'm going to see the third one. I kept being like, but there's going to be a massive lightsaber battle, and it's going to be so cool. It's going to be in a volcano planet. Just give it a chance.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, this could be just a prequel memory remix here. But yeah, that first teaser trailer, when you're seeing the first shots of what we would eventually call Mustafar, mm-hmm. oh my God, it was like, finally, the prophecy is fulfilled. We're going to see this.
Finally, right. Vader's gonna get messed up. All right, let's go. Yeah, final thought for me, we really always try to own our perspective of when we encountered different Star Wars, and a lot of these are definitely Gen X had time to live with original trilogy thoughts. Mm-hmm. We'd love hearing from other people and hearing how your age and where you first experienced Star Wars informed your opinions. And for me, it's always helpful with my Star Wars fandom to hear perspectives from other fandoms. I was just at a Doctor Who convention, and I came into Doctor Who in the mid 80s, the Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker. And I love those episodes. And I've slowly learned over time that people who are with Doctor Who much earlier really have problems with those episodes, those Colin Baker episodes. And now I understand why, But the some of the first fandom conversations I had were people like, well, that your favorite episode is awful. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's the episode that made me fall in love with this show. And it always really helps me to remember that we are very informed by what we encounter first.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear the perspective of those, and it doesn't even have to be assigned to age, but those who saw 1, 2, and 3 and then went, great, I have some thoughts about what episode 4 will be.
Then, right.
Oh, my
God. Obi-Wan's a liar. Jennifer, any final thoughts from you?
I apologize for all the drama, negative things I said about the prequels. Fortunately, a lot of it was offline to my fellow Gen Xers. This thing sucks. I fell asleep. I feel terrible. I take it all back.
Flame Wars do not make one great. That's anything the truth that we've learned. Ken, any final thoughts from you?
No, fun discussion. Great questions today. And now I'm lost in my memories of what I used to dream about in the late 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you both for those great questions. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Andrew. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We're on a lot of spots because, well, there's a lot of spots to find everyone these days. Mostly still on Twitter at Force Center Pod, Threads Force Center Pod. If we get the blue sky, we'll get there eventually. Don't worry about that. It's just another login bit of information we have to come up with. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram as well. Podcast is available in a lot of different spots. Just search. You'll find us. Don't forget, on Sundays right now, we got the Databank Rewind, as Joseph mentioned up top. It is podcast only. We're representing to the world our Databank Brawl episodes from a long time ago. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. I forgot about this one. This t-shirt is canon.
Oh,
it's still there.
Patreon.com/ForceCenter
if you can support us directly. As I said, check out the shop section if you want to individually purchase the episodes of 4007 Center. Follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, KenNapsok.com. I will be in Boston with Mark Ellis first week of April. Official dates are going to be out there. We're going to be on 2 shows, one with Justine Marino and then one over the weekend, first weekend, the 3rd through the 6th. Information to follow, but exciting stuff. Excited to go to Boston. Never been there. That information's coming. Jen, we got the Jedi Beat on our YouTube channel, but where else can they find you?
Yeah, I want one of those t-shirts. I got to get one. You can find me on YouTube, on Instagram, at Jennifer Landa, TikTok, at Jennifer Landa 1138.
There you go. Joseph, great job today, as always, sir. Take us home and tell them where they can find you.
Oh, thank you, Ken. You can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle everywhere. I'm particularly enjoying Blue Sky. If people want to give it a chance, please come find me there. The couple big things going on right now is the Los Angeles premiere of the short horror film I made with lots of great people. It is called The Nightmare Adorable. It is playing as a part of the Hollywood Reel, or Reel spelled R-E-E-L, Reel Independent Film Festival. And it is premiering this Sunday, February 25th at 2 p.m. Information on all of that is on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. So check that out. That is it. We have A'd the Q's.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.